Well, Thanksgiving is a holiday with a story and a menu. Both these have long histories dating back into the realm of legend. These legends began in the 19th century, during the Civil War and somewhat before. Let me tell you, Thanksgiving was started by a woman, Sarah Josepha Hale. She was the editor of Godey's Ladies' Book, the top women's magazine of the early 19th century. Women were moving into the public sphere at that time, so a woman editor of a woman's magazine was not unheard of, but it was new. She was from New England, and she liked the celebration of Founders Day that New Englanders celebrated. Founders Day was all about the Pilgrims and the Indians, and it was just a story. They liked the story, those white New Englanders, and they left out the part about how their ancestors had murdered so many Native Americans, and just the part where they got together in friendship. She was hoping maybe that they would return to friendship, but most of the Native people in her part of the world had disappeared by that time. She had been trying to start a holiday of Thanksgiving, and she wrote to presidents, one after another, imploring them to declare a Thanksgiving holiday in the fall. She finally struck gold during the Civil War. President Lincoln had been calling for days of Thanksgiving every time there was a Union victory. He would urge people to go to their houses of worship and thank God for help received in the war against the rebellion. So here in the mail came this letter from Sarah Josepha Hale. Perfect, a match made in heaven. He declared the third Thursday of November to be Thanksgiving Day. Of course, now it's the fourth, but that's a long story. And it became a holiday for helping gather the community in support of the war. So the story of the Pilgrims and the Indians became part of this program to support the Civil War. Oh, and there was a menu. Sarah Josepha Hale suggested these items for your Thanksgiving feast: roast turkey with cranberry sauce, turnips, boiled fowls with celery sauce, salsify vegetable oyster cakes, boiled ham, winter squash, hot coleslaw, stewed goose, sweet potato pudding, pumpkin pudding — that was probably pumpkin pie — baked lemon pudding. It's gotten a little lighter since then, but you recognize the parts of it, right? And even now, it's still a plenty heavy meal. To look at the original is to know what we're supposed to do, what we're supposed to serve our families. It's a sign of the times that many of us don't do it anymore, but also that we know the expectation. We're not doing what we're supposed to do when we have a BLT. We don't have to do either the menu or the story exactly the same way that it was done in Civil War times. And we can remember that the holidays started as a way of building community support for keeping the union together. We can remember that story and do something else. The story can evolve to include not only the stories of other foundings, the founding of Jamestown in Virginia, particularly, but also the foundings in St. Augustine, Florida, in New Mexico, and in California. And we can remember the shameful history of the relations of the Europeans and the Native Americans. And we can remember the story of immigration of people from all over the world. Both the menu and the story can evolve. And now I'd like to invite you to join in the spirit of prayer and meditation for just a few minutes. Let us take into our hearts the long history of our land and its struggles to become a people. Let us take a little time in silence, then I'll speak some more words, and we can take a little more silence after that. If there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between the neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. If there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart. May peace come.
In our community, we take time each week to share pieces of our lives with one another. We do this because each person in this community has value. Each person's experience matters. We share our sorrows with one another today, knowing that sorrow comes into each person's life, knowing that together we offer comfort. We also share our joys with one another, knowing, too, that joy comes into all our lives, knowing that together our voices can rise in a chorus of celebration. If you have a joy or a concern or a sorrow that you feel moved to acknowledge before this gathered community today, I invite you to come forward, place a stone in the water. After placing the stone in the water, if that is sufficient for you, you may return to your seat quietly, or you may come to the microphone, tell us who you are, and briefly share what is in your heart.
David and I went to the Cleveland Clinic this last week, and we both got pretty good news. Not perfect news, but good news. They're going to try new medication for David to see if that helps some of his symptoms from chronic migraine. And I got my optic nerve is getting better, and some of the worries I had seem to be manageable. So we're very happy with our visit.
I'm Joy LeClaire. In August of 2008, a very beloved nephew of mine was killed returning from fighting the fires in Northern California. He was 1 week shy of his 21st birthday. He would have been 31 now. They say that you never get over these sorts of things, but you do get through them. I have gotten through it, but I will never be over it. And what's happening now, again, is bringing it all back. And my heart goes out to everyone who's lost loved ones there in their homes.
Susan and I placed one stone for Pete Ault, who some of you knew, was a friend of our fellowship with his wife Susan for in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, friend of the fellowship, and he passed away 2 weeks ago. Also for the wife of my nephew's, the sister of my nephew's wife, who just passed away this week after 2 years of struggling with cancer. She was only 40.
I'm Janine. I just have a stone of joy. After 40 hours of labor and a C-section, I have a new grandson, and Steve has a new great nephew. And I just want to say that I'm grateful for all the mothers who sacrificed like my daughter did, and all the dads who support them.
I'm Jory, and I moved here this summer, and I'm so grateful at this time for the joy and companionship that I'm finding here in Bozeman.
I add one stone for all the joys and concerns and sorrows that are left in your hearts unspoken.
Comfort me, God.
called Vegetable Prayer by Max Kutz. Let us give thanks for a bounty of people, for children who are our second planting, and though they grow like weeds and wind too soon blows them away, may they forgive us our cultivation and fondly remember where the roots are. Let us give thanks for generous friends with hearts as big as Hubbard's and smiles as bright as their blossoms, for feisty friends as tart as apples, for continuous friends who, like scallions and cucumbers, keep reminding us we had them. For crotchety friends, as sour as rhubarb and as indestructible. For handsome friends, who are as gorgeous as eggplants and as elegant as a row of corn, and the others, all the others, who are plain as potatoes but so good for you. For funny friends, who are silly as Brussels sprouts and as amusing as Jerusalem artichokes, and serious friends, as complex as cauliflower and as intricate as onions. For friends as unpretentious as cabbages, as subtle as summer squash, as persistent as parsley, as delightful as dill, and endless as zucchini, and who, like parsnips, can be counted on to see you through the long winter. For old friends, nodding like sunflowers in the evening time, and young friends, coming on fast as radishes. For loving friends, who wind around us like tendrils, and hold us, despite of our blights, wilts, and witherings. And finally, for those friends now gone, like gardens past that have been harvested, but who fed us in their times that we might have life ever after, thereafter. For all these, we give thanks.
It's no wonder that the powers of commerce prefer to overlook this, the holiday of Thanksgiving. On the one hand, infecting it with buying in anticipation of Christmas, the season for gifts that have to be purchased, wrapped, and maybe shipped. And at the same time, pushing the food part of this holiday until we can barely resist overstuffing ourselves. It was delicious last night. I speak today in defense of Thanksgiving. This is a holiday for family time, for running a road race, for watching or playing a football game, for having family and friends over for dinner. A holiday for giving thanks for what we have, for who we are, for our place in the world. Abraham Lincoln declared the first Thanksgiving for the third Thursday of November in 1863. He was trying to find something that would promote national unity at a time of great difficulty for the United States. We were in the midst of our Civil War. Young men were dying on the battlefields, and the war was taxing both the productivity of the economy and the fiscal resources of the government. A vision of peace, at least of the peace within the family, is associated with this holiday. In Lincoln's time, when the table was set and everyone sat for dinner, there was often an empty chair for the one who was away fighting or for the one who had died in the war. But it is still a story of peaceful gathering, of gratitude for the harvest, of gratitude for those present, of remembrance for those not there. I think of the wisdom of the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, that when there is peace in the heart, there can be peace in the home, and peace in the home leads to peace in the neighborhood. Peace in the neighborhood leads to peace in the cities. Peace in the cities leads to peace in the nation. At this time of no peace in the nation, I think we need to return to our roots, and Thanksgiving is a good place to start. At the President's proclamation, a nation at war, at least the northern part of it, went to its houses of worship to give thanks for blessings received, then went home and sat at table together, maintaining the peace at the level that could be maintained, keeping it strong, so that when the war was over, true peace could return to the villages, towns, and cities, and then to the nation as a whole. But we distract ourselves. The commerce of Christmas is not the only way we distract ourselves from Lincoln's vision of Thanksgiving. Actually, Sarah Josepha Hale's vision, but Lincoln got to make the proclamation. School children do not learn about Lincoln and Hale and the first Thanksgiving. They learn about pilgrims and Indians meeting in another first Thanksgiving that is mostly legend, a time when supposedly the pilgrims thanked the Indians for helping them, helping them learn how to grow crops in the new land, but it doesn't mention the fact that they started killing them or that they raided the local people's grain storage for winter to get through their first season. We don't need to turn to the legends of the pilgrims and Indians to distract ourselves from remembering that the holiday was born at a time of internal strife for the nation. I find encouragement in the idea that peace can be rebuilt within the heart, and then in the family, and then in the neighborhood, and in widening circles in the nation and in the world. This is a holiday with great potential if we would only stop looking past it to go shopping and make believe stories about pilgrims and Indians. The pilgrim and Indian costumes are cute and it's fun, and the kids' Thanksgiving pageant when the turkey gets away. Still, rehearsing a past that did not happen is not helpful to our understanding of ourselves. Peace is hard work, as those of you who will sit down with extended family this week can attest. The peace in the family may be the hardest of all. A friend of mine sent a Facebook meme about this holiday. The message was, "Thanksgiving, bringing out the best in family dysfunction since 1863. How can we hope to have peace in the world when we can't be civil, much less kind, to challenging, dare I say, obnoxious relatives? What challenges await you this Thanksgiving season? Let me say straight out that I don't expect you to make peace with someone who abused you. If that is in your past, please be sure you take steps to remain safe. You have my blessing if you choose to be somewhere else when that person is going to be on the scene. But the rest of our friends and relatives, Hubbards, potatoes, onions, eggplants, I know how challenging it can be to spend the day with them, doing things that remind you of how it was long ago. Do you find yourself responding to Uncle Jim as if you were still 9 years old? This is not a surprise. Take a deep breath and remember who you are now. Do you find yourself unable to look at Aunt Jane since she had her stroke? Is the Jane you once knew so different from the Jane of now that you find it hard to accept? Take another deep breath. For those of us who are of the older generation, is it hard to relate to your niece now that she is no longer in school? Do you keep going back to ask her about interests she used to have instead of finding out what is exciting in her life now? Does it bother you to see the way your sister's son disciplines or doesn't discipline his children? The larger the gathering, the more the challenges pile in on you, tempting you to something short of full appreciation for the people you are with. I have no wisdom for you except the basics. Take your time, be present, be curious, refrain from judgment. Enjoyment is possible if we allow non-judgmental curiosity to guide us in our Thanksgiving conversations. ask people what they are thankful for, then listen. People are grateful for all sorts of things as they find themselves in many different situations in life. Grateful as a loved one is able to die with dignity. Grateful to be able to help with the mess on the Mexican border. Grateful in both expected and surprising ways for growing children. Ask them about the harvest. What have they reaped this year from work and family projects and in their ministries in the world? Tell them about yours. How is your harvest? How are the things you have been, are the things you have been putting energy into bearing fruit? Allowing the conversation to deepen, that's the risky part. But it's so much more rewarding than chatting about how the grizzlies or the cats are doing, although today, and how the cost of turkey has risen, and how bad the traffic was. Then maybe you can share the stuff that is really between you, the things that continue to make your relationship less than it might be. Or not. Maybe you can just go have a beer and watch the game together, but see what's possible. And listen. Let's see. Take your time, be present. Be curious, refrain from judgment. And oh yes, the I statements. After listening, it is important to share. And if you keep the focus of your remarks on how you feel, what you think, and so forth, it's easier to avoid big blow-ups. And here I am, giving a sermon with a bunch of you statements, helping you navigate your holidays. But of course, I am also advising myself. Me, I'm going to a family Thanksgiving that I'm not in charge of. Part of my job now is to be the elder, appreciating the maturity of these adult people I raised and the people they have chosen as life partners. Another part is enjoying my grandchildren. I'm also threading my way through the process of learning to be a mother-in-law and a grandmother. It's coming along, and I still find myself needing forgiveness from myself and others. I try to be gentle, and I try to say, I'm sorry, when it seems appropriate. Try to find out what would work better. And I focus on having a good time. This eldering thing, I'm getting the hang of it, but it sure is different. So for all of us, listen and share. Take your time, be present, be curious, refrain from judgment. Speak from the heart about things that matter. Be gentle. Be who you are. Leek, eggplant, potato, they're all good. And appreciate them for who they are. Let there be peace in the family. And when there is peace in the family, there can be peace in the neighborhood. Peace in the neighborhood leads to peace in the village. If there's peace in the village, there can be peace in the city. When there's peace in the cities, there can be peace in the nation. When there is peace in the nation, maybe there can be peace in the world. Then will the dreams of Abraham Lincoln and Sarah Josepha Hale for the power of the Thanksgiving holiday be realized. Let us go forth to build peace in the ways we can, beginning at our very own Thanksgiving gatherings.